This is Mark Strassman, reporter with Broadband Over Powerline. We're about to speak with Bruce Francia, who is the Deputy Chief of the Office of Engineering and Technology at the Federal Communications Commission. Welcome to Broadband Over Powerline.
Well, thank you, Mark.
World. Mm-hmm. What's your relationship to the FCC's regulation of Broadband Over Powerline?
Well, I headed up the BPL task force here at the FCC and the rulemaking that went into putting together the new rules for BPL.
Okay, and if you could concisely summarize, what exactly is the FCC's view on BPL now, and what were those new rules designed to implement?
Well, I think, let me take a step back.
Okay.
Basically, BPL operates under Part 15 of the Commission's Rules and Regulations, and it's classified as a carrier current type system, and we've actually had carrier current rules in place probably since the 1940s.
Okay.
And what's happened recently is, if you actually look at those old carrier current systems, and they were things like AM campus radio systems and things that were fairly limited, such as control of switching on the power grid. Technology has sort of moved around, and instead of those narrowband systems, we now can allow, broadband over power lines, and that presents a much different situation than the rules had initially envisioned.
Okay, and the new rules were intended to update the situation in what major ways?
Well, in one way, I think to recognize that these new broader carriers have a much greater potential to create interference, and because they operated over a much wider range of the radio frequency, and that there has to be some mechanisms in place to control that interference should it occur.
Okay, could you talk a little bit as a physicist or as an engineer and talk about why it is that broadband transmissions over power lines have the potential to interfere with other radio transmissions?
Well, basically because they have the potential to be on the same channel.
Okay.
Is the simplest explanation.
Right.
If you're only sending a very short burst communications to, say, to trip a relay somewhere along, that's a very brief transmission that's necessary to do that, and you can use very limited bandwidth to do that. If you now want to provide a broadband service to many homes, it's a much different situation. You're going to be operating over a much wider part of the radio spectrum.
Okay, and so what were the general principles that were enunciated in the October regulations?
The general rules were that we basically required, first of all, there was the general issue of what limits should these systems comply with, and we actually did not change the rules, so they have to comply with the Part 15 emission limits, which are generally low power devices. The other thing is that we require these systems to have the capability to notch or avoid the use of any specific frequency, so that if interference occurs, that they would be able to change frequency and continue service to the public at the same time. Fix the interference situation that might have occurred.
So essentially, the equipment that's used to transmit the broadband signals can be, as you use the word, notched out or modified so that no transmissions take place at specified frequencies.
That's right.
Okay.
And the interference potential here is generally, again, because these are very low low power signals, you have to be in close proximity to someone using the frequencies that are desired by the radio service has to be in very close proximity to the BPL system. So, the situation there is that basically, for example, if you're very close by an amateur that might be living in the neighborhood, you know, you can notch out the frequency that he's operating on.
Okay, now what were the administrative procedures outlined or specified by the FCC regulations in terms of adjudicating or resolving interference issues when they arose?
We really didn't. We basically just indicated that the current processes and would remain in effect. And there's actually a couple other things that we did in the rules. You know, we also, because measuring at HF is fairly difficult, we basically put into place new procedures for measuring BPL systems and actually for other carrier current systems to make it those results more repeatable and more accurate. We also require that BPL equipment be certified rather than verified by the manufacturers.
Well, what's the difference between verification and certification?
Verification, most carrier current systems today, the manufacturer runs some tests, verifies that it complies with the FCC rules and emission requirements, and then it can just market the equipment directly to the public after it has performed it. There's no filing with the FCC at all. For BPL, at least in the beginning, we basically put in place a certification procedure where they actually, before they can market, have to do the tests that show that the devices are compliant with the FCC rules, submit them to the FCC for approval, and the commission actually approves the equipment through its equipment authorization process before the manufacturer can begin selling that equipment.
Does the FCC do any tests itself on the equipment, or does it just take the word of the manufacturer?
Generally, we review the information submitted, but we do randomly sample equipment across the board, or if on that review some questions might arise as a result of that review, we always can call in samples and confirm the testing that was done by the manufacturer.
Okay. Now, again, are there official procedures specified by the FCC when a ham radio operator finds that a BPL test is interfering with his or her operation of their station?
What we did is we basically, you know, reiterated in the item really the current process that the commission goes through when there is a complaint of interference, and that's basically as the first priority is to get the two parties that are involved in the complaint to talk to one another and to try to resolve the situation themselves before, you know, we have limited resources. So, you know, and we've certainly had situations in the past where people say, you know, I'm getting interference from the cell tower. They call the cell operator and they say, well, I don't operate on that frequency band. You know, it's not us. Or they might point to another possible offender. So, you know, the first we basically said here is, you know, if there's a complaint of interference, if, for example, from a ham should contact the local BPL provider. The BPL provider has to basically address that complaint and work out an arrangement with those to resolve that interference. If that can't be resolved, then it goes to the commission.
Okay. Now, those are the general principles. Over the last few weeks, I've reported on two particular BPL trials and the trials therein, one in Briarcliff Manor, Westchester County, New York, that's run by Consolidated Edison working with Ambien Corporation,
mm-hmm.
and reviews of the filings and conversations with both the company and representatives of the amateur radio operators. The amateur radio operators have tried to resolve this, they say, with the trial operators, and they sometimes there's some notching without much effect, and overall they're very dissatisfied that anything has happened, and they've submitted voluminous reports, complaints to the FCC, chronicling their monitoring of the system, and they haven't heard back, and they haven't had the issue resolved. And that's been the case in Briarcliff Manor, New York, and also in Cottonwood, Arizona, where a test is being run with a combination of Arizona Power Public Service Company, and we're going to get to some of the more of the details here, Electric Broadband and Mountain Telecommunications, mm-hmm. Inc., the ARRL, the Association of Ham Radio Operators, have filed with the FCC from there also very detailed graphs and charts and every kind of measurement of the what they claim is BPL interference with their operations, and they haven't heard back from the FCC either. So on their behalf and on behalf of the other side as well, I'm trying to find out what the FCC's involvement in resolving these issues is when the ham radio operators complain to the operators, they don't get satisfaction, they don't get it resolved, then they file complaints with the FCC and they submit documentation and they don't hear from the FCC. Where do things stand in those two cases?
Well, we've had a major Freedom of Information Act request for information from the ARRL.
Right.
And we've been working on that. And in fact, that information went out today.
Can you tell our listeners what it said in general?
Well, in general, it's lots of data on measurements that we've taken, at a number of locations where
the FCC,
where the FCC has taken data, and we've basically visited BPL installations in Maryland, Virginia, North Carolina, in Briarcliff, and Penn, Pennsylvania, and it's a result of all those measurements that the FCC has taken.
When were those measurements taken by the FCC overall, or between when and when?
I don't have the exact dates in front of me, but it's been throughout this rulemaking. I mean,
we've been
investigating BPL for over a year now during this rulemaking process.
Did you take measurements in Cottonwood, Arizona?
No, we didn't.
But you did in Briarcliff.
We did in Briarcliff.
Okay.
And basically, that data is being given to the all of the data has been given to the ARRL.
Okay.
We did in fact. There was also a complaint in Wake County in North Carolina. We went down there and also measured, and that data is also included. And there's sometimes just a difference of a group of opinion when an interference situation, between the complainer and the complainant.
Right.
We went down and the commission's looked at this and kind of made some findings. In each of those cases, now we've actually, if you actually look at what's going on, we've required ambient cooperation, and we've responded to the complaints here, and ambient cooperation has in fact made very many changes to their system to eliminate interference. And generally, where the parties are working to resolve the interference situation, we let that resolution, go on until basically the parties are in impasse, and then we'll kind of go in.
Well, do your records show that the parties are at impasses in Briarcliff Manor, or that things are ongoing? Because from my interviews and perusal of the documents, Ambient says it's taken care of it, and the ARRL says it hasn't taken care of it.
Mm-hmm.
So the issue is who's in charge of deciding whether or not it's been taken care of sufficiently to comply with the FCC rules?
Ultimately, it's the FCC, and again, I don't know what's gone on over the holiday season.
Right.
But, we had seen... We thought at least the complaints in the amateur bands have in fact been resolved in the Briarcliff area. We basically, in the Cottonwood, we understood that there was still some activity that needed to be done there, and we conditioned the license, the grant of that license, with them working with the local amateur group.
Okay, before we get back to Briarcliff and the issues more generally, in Cottonwood...
I think maybe if we could just go back to Wake County, because I think Wake County we ran into the same situation where we felt that the system was certainly compliant with Part 15 of the rules. The system had notched the amateur bands where we had complaints. We actually took measurements at three amateur locations, or at least two out of the three. We actually didn't get to the third location of the amateurs that lived in the community. We made a general finding that the notching was sufficient to protect against mobile, and we found no interference at the two amateur locations for the amateurs that lived in that community.
And how did you issue those? Did you issue official findings or determinations?
We wrote a letter back to the AWRL and to the one amateur that had filed a complaint.
And essentially told them that they need to be satisfied now, and that's the end of it for as far as you're concerned.
We felt that the system had eliminated the harmful interference and that the system was compliant with our rules.
Okay. Now, in many of the interviews that I had with ARRL people, they said that BPL is not just a problem in terms of causing interference for ham radio operators, but that it interferes with shortwave operations as well, and that people who want to listen to shortwave transmissions from around the world are being interfered with as well by BPL. Is that physically possible, and administratively, have you noticed that yourself?
We have not had any complaints from people, particularly, specifically complaining about interference to shortwave reception.
Okay.
Other than assertions to that effect from amateurs, in addition to their amateur interference, their amateur bands.
Okay, in Cottonwood, I think I've linked to on some of my reports a document issued by the FCC giving a license to an entity called Electric Broadband LLC,
mm-hmm.
Instructing it to stay in touch with the Verde Valley Amateur Radio Association, and setting forth various parameters for its operations. I've spoken to one of the partners of that limited liability corporation, and he told me that they're no longer involved in that entity is Electric Broadband is no longer involved with that trial. The web domain for Electric Broadband has a notice saying that it's been revoked, that domain, and I'm wondering what the current involvement from the FCC's perspective is of Electric Broadband in that trial, and if they are out of business or not participating or somehow no longer involved, whether the operation can continue under the license issued to them, and if not, whether some other entity is going to take it over.
Well, clearly, if the entity is no longer in business, our license was to that entity,
right?
And unless there's been a request to transfer that authority or to ask for new experimental license authority, that cannot be done without commission action.
So absent any, do you know if any other entity involved in that test has filed for to take over that license?
I'm not aware, but again, that would generally be filed directly with our filed directly with our experimental radio branch, and I'm not necessarily informed.
Right, but as far as you know, if Electric Broadband's out of business or out of that trial, in other words, they can't be there at the beginning and get the license from you, set it up, and then they stop participating or stop being in business, and the trial can't go on any longer after they go out of business.
Well, they can't operate under the experimental radio authorization, but they could operate under the existing rules, because we have existing rules for carrier current systems.
Right, that don't require any special license.
That don't require any, absolutely.
Would that mean that why did they apply for a special license in the first place, then, if they could have operated under the general rules?
One, they basically could operate at higher powers than are permitted under the existing rules.
Okay.
They could operate with equipment that has not been necessarily tested.
Right.
Or approved, even under the verification process. So lots of folks have decided that, you know, they want to test out multiple technologies, multiple manufacturers' equipment prior to the manufacturer actually going through the approval process.
Right, and they can do that if they have a special license.
So they can do that under experimental authority.
And if that experiment, but as I think you've just said, that experimental authority lapses if the entity that was granted that authority ceases to participate in the test.
Right, and now, I mean, the only thing I can tell you is that I participated in a BPL conference, shortly before the holidays, and Electric Broadband was there and did report on Cottonwood. So
they did report. What did they report at that conference?
There was a session on their activities in Cottonwood, and so. You know, again, this might be a very recent phenomena that they basically decided to end the trial.
Okay. Well,
again, I'm not aware of it.
Okay, because my understanding was that they've ended their participation in the trial,
mm-hmm.
and essentially, what I'm asking is if the trial was being conducted under the license that they had, and they pull out one way or the other, then those extra authority ceases to exist.
They have to operate under our rules. Or they have to basically come in for a new authorization.
Okay. Why don't we talk, let me just get you to summarize what's happening in Briarcliff and where things stand vis-a-vis Ambien, Con Ed, ARRL, and the FCC. Has the FCC issued a judgment saying that there is no harmful interference and ARRL should stop complaining, or have you taken cognizance of what they've said and spoken again to the people who are running the trial?
No, I think at least with regard to Briarcliff, we thought that there were still conversations going on between the parties, and like I said, I think we've suggested to Ambient, and Ambient has made several modifications to its system. It's indicated that, and at least we've had some indication from some of the amateur parties that, in fact, progress has been made. So that's one where we have not, at least right, you know, again, right before the holidays, we thought that the parties were at least making some progress and that things were being worked out among the two parties.
So the FCC is leaving the two parties to work it out between themselves.
I think this is an area that we're continuing to look at. We actually went there, so we have taken some measurements. We do have some judgments on what we think is sufficient to resolve some of the issues up there.
Have you made recommendations to Ambient and Con Ed about that?
Yes, we have.
And do you know if they've accepted your recommendations and implemented them?
We've basically been told that we've suggested some notching, and they indicated to us that they have implemented notching. I believe almost all of the amateur bands.
Okay. So, and then again, I guess I've asked this a few times. Who's going to be ultimately responsible for deciding whether or not the ARRL is satisfied enough, if the two parties can't resolve it, if one of them says it hasn't been resolved, does the FCC have the primary authority for adjudicating that issue, or does it have to go into the courts generally, or what?
Well, I think we have the primary responsibility if there's an interference complaint to resolve that interference complaint. If the parties, do not feel that we've, resolved it satisfactorily, they can always adjudicate it further.
Okay. Let's sort of wrap up with your general view about the compatibility between BPL and amateur radio operators. Do you think that given what you know about it technically and what you've seen here administratively, that the problems of harmful interference generated by BPL are going to stand in the way of a deployment overall of this technology?
I think we basically, are very bullish on BPL. We think it offers great potential to provide, competition, to provide additional broadband to the home. We think that the interference is, as we said in our item, manageable. There is some challenges here, but we certainly have deployments here in Manassas where we have, BPL systems, running right past amateur facilities. We have, large deployments in Cincinnati and in other places around the country where there have not been complaints. So we think that this is a technology that can coexist with amateur radios. I think that the rules that we put in place will protect the licensed radio services and allow BPL to provide, new and broadband services to the public, and we're really excited about it.
Do you think that there's a need, and do you envision any of this happening, to create a more formal structure to make it easier and more efficient for this notching process to take place? In other words, some sort of registry of the bands that are being used?
Well, we basically put in place, a requirement that BPL systems have a publicly accessible database so people can go a zip code and see if BPL is operating in their area. And so we have mechanisms that we put in place in the rules.
Are those mechanisms being used? Are all the BPL suppliers complying with that?
We don't know. I mean, we have not seen reconsideration petitions yet.
What's a reconsideration petition?
Well, our rules are subject to review.
Right.
We go through Administrative Procedures Act and. After publication and in the Federal Register, people that disagree with the decisions that the commission made can file petitions for reconsideration of that action by the commission, and so that process hasn't gone on yet. And these rules are not formally in place until some period of time after publication. So we really don't have the procedures in place as of yet, but at least from the BPL industry, the indications are that they are willing to live with the registration process that we have in place.
Okay, let me ask you one other thing. I don't know whether this falls within your purview. There was some back and forth in the last week or so about a filing, an ex parte filing made by Earthlink to the FCC, in which they stated their view that broadband over power line was not going to be a viable third wire into the home. And they've recently clarified that in an interview they did with this show, saying that they were as bullish as anyone on BPL themselves. And in an effort to understand why they would have said what they said in the filing, it was in the context, they said, of not allowing the hypothetical positioning of BPL as a viable way of delivering broadband service to interfere with what they hoped would be the FCC's reluctance to deal with the unbundling issue over cable and telcos. Now, can you say anything about that?
I could say I'm an engineer.
Right.
And I think that's that. You know, those issues are basically, I think, are, you know, the commission's struggling with, and you know, and really go to DSL, go to cable, and go to the WISPs and all broadband providers. You know, we think we have, you know, our job was to put the technology, the technical rules in place, and I think at this point in time, I think the commission's basically said, you know, let this service, you know, begin and get off the ground, and we'll deal with some of the regulatory issues when we after this service is established.
So you don't think that the possibility of BPL providing widespread broadband access is going to be leveraged by proponents of deeper or less unbundling at the FCC as an excuse or a reason for denying access to alternative providers to use cable or telco facilities?
I think you're. I'd be really just hypothesizing on those issues. They're really outside my expertise.
Okay.
I mean, you know, I think those issues go way beyond just BPL.
Right. Okay.
And you know, so I think we'll have to deal with those. You know, and they certainly apply to the wireless ISPs and other issues, and they're the same kinds of issues. Universal Service, CALEA, and all those.
Right.
You know, they'll have to get worked out too.
Okay, then let's close by focusing again on your view, and through your technical expertise and experience, how viable is BPL, and is interference with amateur radio operators likely to put the kibosh on it?
Well, we think it's very. I mean, I think we spent a lot of effort to try to do this rulemaking I think what we tried to do here was really to recognize the fact that BPL has a tremendous potential to be a third competitor. Electric wires go into every home.
Right.
It has it in a gigantic advantage from that way. It also has an advantage in that, you know, BPL can provide services that are useful for the utility itself to manage the power grid.
Right.
And to make the power grid safer in a homeland security way. So it has other things besides that are advantages for electric power grid and utility providers that go beyond just providing broadband to the home.
Right.
We think that's you know, so that there may be reasons why people want to do this, and we've certainly heard from utilities, you know, people want to do this that the you know, even without providing service to the home.
Right.
So we think it's certainly viable. We think that those extra things really are very helpful. We've seen you know, competition do marvelous things in the wireless area. Certainly, if you look at what has happened with cell phones, with the cellular radio service rates, when PCS came into play, you see what DBS has done in the cable area. You know, a third competitor, in the broadband area. You know, I think everybody can see tremendous advantages in competition. At the same time, being the third person on the block, you know, showing up to the party is always very difficult. You know, and whether it's going to make, you know, whether BPL is going to be a major provider, I think that's a big question mark. It does have some limitations in terms of the amount of spectrum available to it. It has to avoid these interference situations. You know, but we think that the rules in place that we've done are neutral in terms of protecting the licensed radio services and at the same time allowing BPL to prosper.
Okay, because the argument has been made by some strong proponents of investors in BPL, let me say, who essentially have said to the amateur radio operators, get over it. You're an antiquated and irrelevant technology, and if you're interfered with, that's just, you know, tough for you. That's not the position of the FCC.
I don't think it's the position, and we've already seen, you know, the in-home BPL, you know, home plug,
right,
has basically lived very well with the amateur community, and seem to have gotten along very well with the amateur community. So, you know, I'm very optimistic at the end of the day, you know, technology is going to solve this problem, that there's enough frequencies that basically amateurs can operate and BPL can operate in a compatible mode.
Okay. I'm very glad to have had you here to clarify all this. And as the issue continues to evolve, hopefully we can get back and talk about it some more.
Absolutely.
Thanks very much for talking to us today on Broadband Over Powerline World.
Okay. Thank you.
Bye-bye. You're welcome. Bye.